When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Podcast. The podcast is trying to create a realistic, down-to-earth show that's completely off the wall and swarming with magic robots. I'm Graham Thillis, and I'm here to provide a modicum of calm between two men scared stiff by the ongoing juggernaut of Motherwell FC. First, we have a dresser snapper, then a terrapin and a bear trap. Hello, Craig Kearns.
Hello, I've got a really tickly cough. I don't know. As soon as I hit record, I just felt this itch in my throat, and I had to wait for you to introduce me to get it out. And also, I've been accepting that title for a while now, and I'm not the snappiest dresser on the Tennis Podcast.
Second on my list, but by no means second in our hearts. Hello, Tom Watt.
Hi. I don't have anything better to say.
Before we get started with the weekend's action, how about we have a quick look at what's hot and what's not? Does somebody want to start? It's very negative. There's a great negativity around. Does somebody want to start us with a hottie, or will I start us with a hottie?
Well, my hot's a little bit negative.
Go for it.
Cool hot.
It's suggesting a player should be called up to the Scotland squad after 10 good minutes against St Johnston. That's quite hot at the moment.
Yep.
Lyndon Dyke seems to be the most recent one. His was against Celtic, I suppose, and not against St Johnston, but everybody's clamouring for Lyndon Dykes to be in the Scotland squad now after a good performance. Now, he's had a good season so far, and like I pointed out the last time I was on the pod, I think they would have beaten Aberdeen if he was playing. If he and Lithgow had been playing, I think Livingston would have won that game. But still, are we not stretching it a bit far to say that, I mean, Lyndon Dykes isn't going to solve Scotland's striking problems?
We called up Lauren Shankland, so that's, yeah, fine.
Our quota is full.
Yeah. One of my hotties is weird crowd shots. We had Stephen Ferguson and Stuart Kettlewell admiring what appeared to be a wonderful wooden schooner.
Was this during the game?
I have no idea. I have no context for it whatsoever, but just the two of them admiring a boat, like an actual wooden sails rigging boat. And Pikachu was at Inverness versus United. Have a look through the SPFL Instagram page. You will find Pikachu at Inverness versus United. So I would thoroughly encourage more of this. It's like you get it at Christmas from time to time where people all dress up. And you pan around the crowd and it's normal.
On the final away day.
It's like normal. Like totally normal day. And then there's a giant Superman or something. It's just more of that I'm absolutely fine with.
There was a similar shot for the recently where someone was just toasting with a bottle of Buckfast. And the camera panned across and just kind of casually, like blinking, you'll miss it.
In addition, you had the guy at Dundee United carrying a cool box as well, which led to a great thread from Craig Anderson, where a guy was saying that there's a guy that turns up at East End Park with like a full multi-pack of Capri Sun because he refused to pay like £2 for it.
I remember seeing somebody not getting told at the turnstile at Tynecastle years ago that they weren't allowed to take their chippy in because it was a container. How is this guy getting in with a whole cooler?
I was on, this is a highlight to my old life really, but I was in Edinburgh and I went to Loopy Pinto's beforehand and bought like some hot sauce, some pinto beans and various other things, and then went to the football and the boy's like, can I see in your bag? And I was like, ah, I see a problem that's going to arise here. And he's looking at the bottles and the cans and he's like, I don't think I can let you in. And I was like, right, how about if someone throws a bottle of hot sauce, you just come and lift me?
And he's like, take a picture of me right now.
Well, yeah, I was like, if somebody throws a bottle of hot sauce at Wanma, then you can come and lift me. Even if it's not me, right?
I'll write my name on
this. This is fine. If I throw a bottle of hot sauce or some beans at Wanma, you can come and lift me. That seems like a reasonable... And he sort of looked at me and was like, I suppose, I mean, that's fair enough. That's absolutely fine.
Again, it's kind of a negative, the international break just coming in along and a free hit against Russia, who cares about, and a game against San Marino that even Scotland couldn't fail to mess up, surely. Just to kind of, we were just saying just before we started, only 33% of the people around the table are remotely satisfied with the way that their club is performing at the moment, and I'm not one of them, and I can't really be bothered watching them at the moment, so... A couple of
it's
weeks.
Just something
off.
That's not that. Yeah, it is a real positive.
See, I bring this up quite a bit, and I think that I'm not in the majority on the podcast when I say it. But I actually quite like international breaks because I see them as a little bit of a break. I don't need to follow dozens of matches. I can just get away with
watching.
Just enjoy the games.
Half an eye on a Scotland game that I'm not really that enthused by.
I really like Tom's enthusiasm of enjoying a Scotland game, which is...
Well, there's levels of enjoyment. Not
Shankland's involved.
Exactly. Banging them in against San Marino and justifying an inclusion in a game that actually matters, in which case it's a terrible
ending. I have a fully positive hottie as well, which is... This is a bit of a throwback to something that I brought up quite a while ago now, but there's an Aberdonian Big Dons fan, Ross Andrew, who played an international game for the British Virgin Islands. So they played Bonaire. They lost 2-1, but he won a penalty. He is 31 years old, has only ever played five-a-side football, but has been in the Virgin Islands for over 5 years. So he turned up at some trials and they selected him. He got his first start against Bonaire last month. I meant to bring it up at the time, but kept forgetting. Again, they lost 4-2 to Bonaire. There are three in the, what was it, the CONCACAF Nations League. They are somehow playing another three games in a week, which for a squad which features a guy who's 31 years old who turned up because he played some fives and then did a tryout and gets to play international football. Three games in a week seems like a stretch, but they're playing the Bahamas twice plus the grudge match return against Bonaire as well. So Ross Andrew, who is apparently registered as Andrew Ross for reasons that no one's quite clear on, Don's fan from Aberdeen, who's playing international football somehow. So yeah, a really positive thing, just because he was hanging out in the British Virgin Islands for long enough.
Can he do it in a warm Wednesday afternoon in the Bahamas?
If he can't do it there, then maybe he can do it in a Category 3 hurricane. One way or the other, you're going to get one or the other. So it really, to me, this is the absolute dream scenario, where you end up taking a job somewhere in a bit of the world where the residency rules are a bit lax, and you get to tell people that you played international football.
Yeah.
Because you hung out for a bit, played a bit of fives, and then... presumably just turned up at some trials and got a game.
Yeah, one of my mates has always had this idea that if somehow he can somehow manage it while his wife's pregnant to go to San Marino and have a child born there, dramatically increases the chances of international football. I'm not sure that works anymore in the post-Brexit wasteland.
The worst international football team on the planet, though, aren't
well,
they?
You know, still, you've got to take your pick.
Maybe
still,
the worst, but they have the worst. They're not the worst in the rankings or something like that.
But he's got 20-odd years for them to produce another good player for him to play alongside. So,
yeah,
it's a long game.
Do we have any more?
No. I have a hottie that became a naughty, and that was the Ross County Stadium announcer at the weekend. Did the thing where you you read out a number plate, let's say like your car, and then he said, could you please return to your car because I'm sure it sounded like, I listened to it a few times and I couldn't quite exactly hear what he was saying, but it sounded like he said, your journal's getting wet because your windows are down. And then later on, that's why I kept rewinding it, because I thought he can't be just picking out the journal. But anyway, something was getting wet in his car because he'd left his windows down. And then later when Ross County equalised, he did the U2B, and then the crowd did the rest of it, and I didn't like that, so I decided that wasn't hot.
That seems entirely fair enough. My only other naughty was just complaining about Craig Levein. I'm very tired of this whole timeline of people at length continually getting very, very upset about Craig Levein and jumping up and down about Craig Levein. I just don't care anymore.
Are you just going to skip me later on?
Yeah, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. You're more than welcome to, but I'm just really tired of it. I just find the whole thing really, really tiresome.
How do you think we fucking feel?
Well, also that as well. I realise I'm playing into it by bringing it up again, but yeah, I find it the whole thing very, very tiresome. Anyway, we'll start off the weekend with the most intriguing battle we've had for years, as Motherwell continue their good form of beating teams that they should probably beat to consolidate third place, with goals from James Scott and a late clincher from Chris Long as they defeated St Mirren 2-0. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed my Saturday afternoon, so we'll just get this out of the way quickly and then we'll talk about it. Liam Polworth is an absolute baller, as it turns out. I had in my head for years that somebody else was highlighting this. I think somebody mentioned it in Pie and Bovril, but it's very much, to me, Highland footballers are Ross Stokely. And that's what a Highland footballer looks like. And now a Highland footballer is Liam Polworth, who's an absolute ball. And I can't emphasize, he was so, so good. He was...
Ryan Christie, mate.
Well, exactly. Ryan Christie and Liam Polworth. Apparently, the Highland Football Academies are just turning out incredible footballers now, which is odd, possibly a bit surprising.
I mean, yeah, it's weird that he's only 24.
Yeah, because he feels like he's been around
for a really long time. And he probably stayed at Cali a year longer than he should. I mean, he had his issues last year and kind of fell out of the section of the support.
Yeah, like, he was...
Rightly so, because he was kind of singled out as...
He was singled out when they weren't doing very well as a team. He missed a penalty against Ayr, I think, in a 0-0 draw. Yeah. And then I think I remember him taking to Twitter because some people were... aiming abuse at his family or something like that, and he kind of said, like, say what you want about me, but I kind of draw the line at people talking about my family. But it seemed a bit unfair that even he was being singled out in that team at that time.
Did he not average like an assist a game last season for
pretty much. Yeah. I think he's got something like 30 odd assists in the last two seasons for Cali, and you know, was 22, 23 years old, local boy. It's all the things that you should really rally around, but they didn't. And it was particularly in the middle of the run where Kelly just kept drawing games. For some reason, he was singled out as one of the worst culprits in it, which wasn't fair at all. Really good footballer, wasn't really suited to... I mean, even though he got a lot of assists, probably wasn't suited to some of the more physical side of football in the Championship, and definitely, I think, stayed on a season too long. He just looks so much more confident. Like, he's taking touches, he's playing passes, he's getting on the end of things.
And he's just slipped in there seamlessly as well. I mean, Motherwell, last season, obviously David Turnbull burst on the scene, and he's been the guy who's come in. Now, I know that when Turnbull's back, they're all there kind of providing competition for each other, but at the moment he's come in to be the guy to, like, fill the gap while Turnbull's injured. And he's done so well at it, because obviously Turnbull was one of the standout performers for quite a lot of last season, and to come in and just fit in so seamlessly, hit the ground running and not take any time to kind of get up to speed, it's quite impressive.
What was most impressive on Saturday, aside from the fact that he was not just doing the things that you imagine he would do in terms of playing nice passes and keeping the ball moving, he was very, very good at getting his ball across, getting his body across players. He was doing all the hard working things that you want out of a midfielder as well, particularly when you take a trio of Liams down to two, and because Liam Donnelly was out. So he was absolutely terrific in there, but he was the best example of the team on Saturday. And it broadly, from back to front, we were just so patient on the ball. There was no... St Mirren came and set up and were, as you imagine St Mirren have been over the past few games, very defensively resolute, and it looked like it was going to be a frustrating afternoon. But Motherwell were just so patient throughout the game. There was no attempt to force passes. There was no attempt to try things that were too complicated. It was just a case of Polworth taking the ball in midfield, just moving it, and players moving left, right. And the first goal was the best example of that. The ball came all that went from left to right with Scott, who came across the front of the goal, gave it to Polworth, and then by that point, eventually found half a yard of space to swing a shot in, which again was just a terrific finish there as well. Speaking of sort of homegrown local players doing very well as well, Barry Maguire again dropped into that central midfield and looked like he'd played 100 games for us.
I thought he was a centre half as well.
He played centre half for Queen of the South last year. He is nominally meant to be a centre half, but having watched him, it's a complete waste to play him there. Certainly at this point in his career, he has more than enough legs to survive as a midfielder. He's closer to Alan Campbell than he is to David Turnbull, but that's the role that he's asked to play there. The sheer number of times he put St Mirren players on their arse by taking the ball past them and just drifting away. He wasn't running around the pitch, he was gliding around the pitch, and he just had that ability of just seeing a St Mirren player coming and taking that half step left or right or whatever it is it's coming from and just gliding right past him. It was remarkably assured from him. He maybe gave the ball away a couple of times, but aside from that, for a guy that's kind of making his real sort of first team debut, and he's played a few games before but not quite in quite the same sort of scenario, and I thought he was absolutely terrific throughout. From a St Mirren point of view, Hladke for me is probably up there with the best goalkeepers in the league comfortably. He is so good. The way in which he makes absolutely everything look dead easy is testament to himself. His positioning is absolutely fantastic. Maybe caught out a little bit by Long's goal at the very end, but ultimately give a shit by that point. But he was very, very good again.
Yeah, I mean, the concern for St Mirren, I think, is they have stopped taking hidings, but they haven't figured out how to score.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got, what, three goals all season. They look a lot more compact. They look a lot more structured. They don't look like they have a striker of any, you know, shape or form. And that's a big concern for being bottom. They don't look like the worst side in the league.
No, but they
could conceivably be cut adrift quite quickly. Because
Mullen always gives the impression that he might do something out of the ordinary, because he did that a collection of times last season. The fact that he doesn't have any Dundee teams to play against this year might be his undoing in that respect.
Yeah, he scored a couple of vital goals last season, which helped keep them in the league. And in this game, he came closest for them as well. The shot that Gillespie tips over the bar.
Yep.
Yeah, they seem to have a few options and none of them quite are up to scratch yet. But Mullen's one of... I think Mullen's maybe the only one who hasn't had a run in the team yet, and he probably deserves a run in the team, because, like I said, towards the end of last season, he did play a part in keeping them in the league. Junior Marias, I know he didn't play in this game, but he seems like to be like a physical player but not very effective as a target man. They've got Bika, who's kind of a wee bit similar to Mullen in some ways. He's a hard worker and that kind of thing, but he hasn't looked like scoring. Actually, he came quite close to rescuing a point against Hibs, but other than that, I don't really remember him. He was through on goal against Hearts, maybe not quite through on goal, but he had a chance against Hearts that he put wide, and he doesn't look much of a goal threat. An underrated moment, sorry, can I just say before we move, I'm going to move on, but an underrated moment of the James Scott goal, which was a fantastic strike, but they're all kind of standing off him, is Alan Campbell's run to the kind of St Mirren left back area, drags Foley out of that position, and you see after the goal goes in, Broadfoot's gone to step out, and he's kind of like, where's the midfielder in front of me? And Flynn's got caught between two players, and I think the run from Campbell, he kind of arcs his run over to the left back area and drags Foley over there, and that creates the gap.
That's what it was all day long. Just a case, there was a lot of the game played up in the St Mirren third of the pitch, and it was just moving it left and right, and eventually at some point or other they were going to break, because they're not good enough to do that for 90 minutes. They need to score a goal from somewhere. Second half, there was a period where Motherwell just kept giving the ball away, and I think Djorkaeff kind of summed up St Mirren of the day, and he came on, had a great chance to get a goal and equalise, and then subsequently 2 minutes later gave the ball away for Long to score.
Like, there's Djorkaeff. I was like, we've not seen him since the League Cup, and then 5 minutes later I was like, and we won't be seeing him again for
it's going to be a while. So St Mirren never looked particularly threatening, had chances but never really looked like they were going to take many. Now, a team that does take its chances, moving on seamlessly, as Rangers put 5 past Halton Ackies, with Jermaine Defoe sealing himself an almost certain place in EA Sports Team of the Week. Barisic and Goldson all with their goals. How highly are we currently rating Borna Barisic?
Yeah, he's really grown into the role. It's been the position that's given Gerrard the most headaches over his time at Rangers, I think. He started the season with 3 options there, none of which he seemed to be fully confident in. I think Barisic, he intended to be his first choice there, but he never kind of lived up to his billing. Halliday was has always been a stopgap in that position, and Flanagan has been the kind of guy that he's put in there when he maybe needs a bit more physicality in certain phases or parts of the game, or somebody who he sees as the most dependable out of the three, even though he's kind of slightly shoehorned and on his unnatural side.
I do wonder whether Flanagan's performance in the Old Firm has kind of forced his hand in this respect, and the number of times Rangers worked the ball really, really well so the fullbacks can get forward, but every time Flanagan got forward had to come back inside.
At the same
and
time,
Celtic knew that every time he had to come back inside, so it was like you didn't need to defend going down the line, essentially.
At the same time, Gerrard, that was the only player that Gerrard gave marks to in that game. He said they were
he was okay in the game, but didn't offer what he needed going forward, which is what Rangers need, because so much of the width comes from the fullbacks. I did wonder that at the time, whether it was a case of, well, that's, you've found the limitations, you've found how far you can go with Flanagan, you now understand, everyone understands that you don't need to defend the line because he's not going to go there.
But Barisic isn't getting called up to the World Cup runners-up squad for nothing. I mean, there's obviously a player in there, it's just taken him a while to get to hit this form.
Just imagine, I mean, bearing in mind that his teammate Eros Gerezda was meant to be the better of the two players.
Yeah.
Just imagine how good Eros Gerezda is going to be, and how much of
the Albanian Messi.
Imagine how much he's going to be worth from that initial outlay that Rangers off was. It's like £1.5 million that they outlay on it. Imagine how much he's going to be worth if when he makes that final step that Barisic does once he stops spitting on people.
I think having the two natural fullbacks lets them play some of the best footballers they've got. I mean, let Arfield play, let Davis play, let, you know, whether it's Kamara or Jack, who aren't necessarily gifted with huge amounts of pace.
No.
And it means that they can have, you know, Defoe up front taking chances. And Greg Stewart, who I think everyone was kind of puzzled as to why. What he was going to bring.
Well, his career looked done before it had started.
There's a couple of times this podcast that today I'm going to have to, like, generally I need to hold my hands up at some point, but I'm definitely going to have to hold my hands up on that one. There will be more as well, but certainly on that one, I didn't think Stewart would contribute a huge amount to Rangers at all, and as you say, keeps doing more.
And if you have the pace coming from the fullbacks, and you've got the. He was able to find angles. Like, he's not a wide player. He's not a number nine. And he's only intermittently in his career found the position that he needs. Only he seems to know where he plays. He sort of drops deep, makes space. But in games like this, he's got an awful lot more freedom to kind of do what he wants and see where he fits in, which is much more than.
That's exactly the signings that Rangers, in the end, kind of should be making, in terms of, you don't expect Greg Stewart to play in an Old Firm game and do the same thing, because he's playing against much better players. You don't necessarily expect him to do it in Europe either, because again, you're playing it, but on a Sunday afternoon when you've got Hamilton Aki's at Ibrox and you need to rotate the squad, when you need to give other players a rest, play
and
Greg Stewart.
Also, Gerrard is forward players in quite a few matches have been playing a bit more narrow this time. This season, and Stewart's kind of managed to fit into that. So rather than playing as a winger coming inside, he is kind of like tucking into like a kind of a more of a kind of 10 role, and that's
floating.
You saw him do that to devastating effect last week against Aberdeen, and putting Defoe through for the opening goal in this one. And on Defoe, I don't want to go into the whole Morelos Edouard debate again, but Rangers have two very hungry on-form forwards that they can comfortably rotate
that keep cuddling each other as well. It's the cutest thing in the world.
And there's no you're comfortable with either of those starting just about any of the games they play at the moment. I know that Morelos tends to play the European matches, but in the domestic matches, Rangers can afford to play whichever one Gerrard thinks is going to be best for them that day. Celtic don't have that backup at the moment. They've got an excellent forward, but they barely have anything in reserve.
But But these are exactly on those lines again as well. It's exactly the sort of games where you can drop Edmondson into the team, you can drop Greg Short into the team, you can bring back Jamie Murphy into the team. Guys who may or may not have a huge role to play for the rest of the season, but they're the games where it means that you can give somebody else a day off and say, I mean, this is even more relevant when we come on to the Celtic game after this as well. There is much more of a squad rotation and much more of a, I don't know if it's a trust in the players and just, or just an acknowledgement that we are better than Hamilton Accies. With Defoe up front, we are going to score goals against the six centre-halves that Hamilton Accies put out today. And you're looking at, in terms of the last three games, Rangers have an aggregate score of 14-0.
Yeah. Last time they did that was against Stranraer, Airdrie and East Fife.
Excellent.
Bit more stern competition.
Excellent.
Time.
Very good. And every statistic of this game is just so heavily weighted towards Rangers in that respect. Accies, I think it was yourself, Craig, in the group chat just before the game, like, how many centre-halves can you name in that Accies lineup?
It's actually Fowler.
It's a Fowler, sorry.
But the thing is, Gogic, I don't know whether he's trying to say that Gogic is one as well. Gogic has played centre midfield all season. I actually think that might be his natural position. I just think he filled in it centre half for a while when he first arrived. But yeah, there was four centre halves and a left back.
Yeah,
because I didn't know who was playing right back when I saw the lineup, and turns out it was McKenna. But yeah, it was a very defensive shape. But when you line up like that and you concede within the first
7 minutes,
yeah, exactly. Then the game's only going one way, really, isn't it?
Yeah, as Defoe looked every bit the player that some people predicted and not the player that I predicted. So yeah, good. Well, well done me. Speaking of squad rotation, ins and outs of it, Livingston 2, Celtic 0. We also welcome aboard my Lyndon Dykes rollback extravaganza as I talk at length about how great Lyndon Dykes is.
Should be in the Scotland squad, mate.
I do actually, in hindsight, look back and I go, I really wish we'd signed Lyndon Dykes, although I welcome him in Motherwell for season 21-22.
Yeah, exactly.
There's very few players I've seen that look more like a Stephen Robinson player than Lyndon Dykes. He was absolutely tremendous over the course of the game, over the 84 minutes he played, which gave us, again, perfect from Gary Holt, because it gave me a wee flutter as we got to see Lee Miller come onto the pitch. But he absolutely broke Christopher Julien, which was great.
Yeah, also, all credit for trolling all the fans that are like, you can't play on that pitch by doing like a double knee slide when you scored, like, suggesting it was dangerous. I'll show you dangerous.
I'll show you dangerous. Livingston.
he'll be out next week. But yeah, Livy were not in great form coming into it. I think they've lost four in a row and had never beaten Celtic. But they played well against them over the last couple of years. You know, they've caused them problems.
And
a couple of draws and a
lost
fairly narrow loss
against Lennon, I'm sure.
That's
his fourth game against Lennon and hasn't lost against them or something along those lines.
Again, even though they're not winning games, it's not been Livy have been playing badly. The Aberdeen game where they couldn't score, the Rangers game where they played well, the Rangers game Ibrox where they took the lead.
Yeah, and they did everything that you should do, again, you're meant to do, but it's so hard to do in practice. You know, they chased things down, they hunted in packs, they were throwing bodies on the line. I mean, there were points like at 2-0 up when there were seven men in the box and there's two men throwing themselves at the ball, mm-hmm. and the ball's cannoning off someone's thigh and going 30 yards clear.
It was that one when Steve Lawson had been on the pitch for about 25 seconds and just he saw the ball break at the edge of the box, like, I'm getting there, I'm getting there as fast as I can and putting my body right there. Unbelievable.
Yeah, they were excellent. As good as they were, Celtic were pretty terrible. I mean, I don't think we're taking anything away from Livingston. I'll come back on to sing their praises a little bit further. But I think, having spoken about the rotation that Rangers can offer, Celtic only made one change, I think, from the team that played Cluj earlier in the week. And they looked a lot more, they looked jaded, they looked tired. The tackle, Ryan Christie's tackle was horrendous and lazy and all the things that it shouldn't have been. But they, even down to 10 men, you've got to go back like 5.5 years for the last time Celtic lost when they'd lost a man.
Yeah.
They're still dangerous, and credit to Livingston, who made them play like a 10-man team, you know, exploited the space, made sure that when there was a chance to run down the clock, they ran down the clock, made sure that they ran the ball well, and put an awful lot of pressure on a back line that looked awfully shaky and incredibly naive.
Chris Iyer seems... it's been something which I've watched more and more this season, kind of in the last season, more this season. I really like Iyer. I think he's a fantastic player, but he seems to have taken on the role of chief finger pointer and finger waver. As opposed to just getting, I realise it sounds absolutely like your dad, but just getting on with it and just being a centre half, seems to want to be involved in everything, seems to want to be up. And I get that, again, from a Celtic point of view, if you're winning games, that's great, you love them and it's great, and that's the mentality you want within the team. But when you're two down with 5 minutes, why are you getting involved? Mm. Get in the box.
Yeah, Dykes had them riled. And not just Dykes, Livingston. Livingston turned the game into a shit fest. And not because Livingston can't play any football. I don't mean it to sound like that, but because that was clearly their tactic to get Celtic down, to come down to their level and to be better at them. Than them at it. And they did. And they were aided by the red card because Ryan Christie, as you saw in the game on Thursday night, he was Celtic's most effective player when they didn't have the ball. And they lost a lot in the midfield when he went off.
He's been responsible for, is it a third of Celtic scores?
30% of their goals or something like that. Yeah, so there's that element to it as well. But yeah, they brought Celtic, they made the game a shit fest, and they're very good when it comes to that. But they also have quality in the last third of the pitch. And their game, even though they do it slightly differently than this season than they did last season, their game is about getting the ball into the right areas and then playing football in the right areas, and they did that again. And the first goal was excellent. Robbie Crawford shouldn't be left in that amount of space.
It goes, that pass goes straight into my top five most shaggable passes of the year.
This was brilliant. And Scott Robinson's not that much of a goal threat, really.
He almost gets a chance to stop and go.
That's it.
I instinctively, because he was in so much space, just assumed he was off.
Yeah.
Because how can he possibly be in that much space? But again, that's, like you say, it's shit-festing it, but again, it's being brave with it as well. It's dead easy. It's like as St Mirren in the Motherwell game tried to stop Motherwell playing and sat back. The opposite of that is pushing teams back in as well on the other side as well, and having that many players that high up the park so that Robinson can make that run and Bauer can't go because he's got somebody wide left. Iyer and Julian can't go. Ballingoli's got somebody outside. Nobody can track the run because everyone has someone to cover. And that's the bravery of it as well in terms of Livingston just getting that many bodies that far forward.
They did that really, really well, and I think and they varied it as well. I think that the difference between the forward players were dropping into midfield and the Celtic defence had tried to play quite a high line, especially when Christie got sent off, but then were being pushed back and they weren't quite sure where they were meant to sit, because the first goal, there's a massive hole in the midfield and there's a huge amount of time for Crawford to pick his pass. But even the second goal, when they decide they're pretty much, you know, they're 3 yards off the halfway line, and they're like, "Are we going to hold this at?" And incredibly naive, but when you don't know where you're being pulled because Livingston are moving forward in numbers, and you know they can't play the same high line because of their man down in midfield, it meant there's this massive, great big gap, so you could send a ball in over the top, and there's 40 yards to put that ball into. And that was testament to the way Livy played, because they just didn't. Celtic just did not know where their line was.
They were absolutely like Julian is the best example of how much Livingston broke Celtic.
Yeah,
because he was gone. He had absolutely lost it come the end of the game.
I mean, Livingston were being shits, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah,
like who was it? Who was it that kind of gave him a little bit of a choke when he was on the ground?
Lamy. But again,
they were doing stuff that wasn't like. There was nothing. I mean, Jacobs is borderline. I mean, you couldn't have argued if he'd been red carded. But other than that, they weren't doing anything that would have got them sent off. They were just kind of being sneaky and snidey. And
again, that was because Julian had lost it and was throwing himself at people. Lamy decided, "I'm not having that. Yeah. Not having that." So again, grabbed him by the shirt, gave him a little shake, and then after that, just completely.
Even Lennon spoke about Julian's mentality after the game, like saying he didn't use the word lost, but I think he said immature or something like that, rather than pointing the finger.
He spent £7 million on him.
Yeah, rather than pointing the finger at the people winding him up, he was pointing the finger at him for getting wound up.
But I imagine there's an awful lot of people who, at one point or other over the last 10 years, have had a Scott Brown and Elhad Stouf avatar who are raging at the actions of cynical Livingston taking the piss out of them. Yeah.
Again, the thing that I understand, Livingston, as you say, are absolutely terrific. The one that absolutely blows my mind is Jack McMillan, who's certainly right-footed, playing at left-back, was absolutely fine for Motherwell, never really looked like he was going to be a top-flight player. His performance was terrific throughout the game as well, but coming just last thing on Celtic really is, so my questions on it as a case of, like, where's Scott Sinclair? Why are Encham and Hayes playing 15 minutes? Like, this, none of that makes any sense. As Tom said, there's one change from the close team.
Talking about them being jaded, and we've spoken about this quite a lot recently, about the likes of McGregor not getting a rest, and you can put Encham in there. And
Tierney said that just recently as well. Like, he's been run into the ground.
And you're not really losing anything. I mean, you might be gaining something at this point, because I put McGregor down as my prediction for player of the year, and he's nowhere near it at the moment.
Again, and Encham, again, on a...
And I think that's to do with him being... I think that's nothing to do with his ability, and it's more to do with the fact that he's not had a rest. It's well documented how many games he played last season. Mm. And like I said, I don't want to go over old ground, because we've kind of spoken about this in the pod a wee bit recently, but that, I think that, again, that was another example of that, where just give him a rest. Give the boy a rest.
Yeah, and to me, this is the perfect... This is one of the perfect games for Encham, in that he is more patient with the ball, and... In a game like this, when Livingston are going to be on top of you, Livingston are going to be chasing you down, hunting you down, having someone with his technical ability, his patience and his passing surely makes more sense in midfield. Even just taking the element of the knackered Celtic players out of the equation altogether, he seems like a better fit for this game. It's a case of, if you're going to have Jacobs, Bartley and Crawford chasing you down in midfield, then maybe Encham picking passes in there is a smarter move, rather than trying to go toe-to-toe with a team who want to outrun you.
And for Celtic, I mean, they're for Celtic and what they want to achieve and them as a club. They're, in any given season, they're going to play 60-odd games. In any given season. So, like, up with all the European elites with in terms of the number of games they're going to play over the course of the season. Because there's an expectation you're not going to rest players for the League Cup. You're not going to rest players for anything. You've got to win absolutely every single game. So if you're not rotating from the Cluj game, which was arguably their best performance of the season, I think they looked solid, and all the players they brought in for the first time, it was like, right, now I know what you're all here for and what you're all doing. To 4 days later to be playing that kind of Livingston team in, you know, I have no problem with the surface, but the surface is an X factor, and you may have to rotate your squad for that, and there is pressure to win every single game. You need to rotate the squad an awful lot more than he did.
Just a final thing on Livingston as well. Is Hibs releasing Marvin Bartley the daftest thing Hibs have done in a while?
It looks worse than every passing week.
It's mental. It was the point for him and Brown were down in the corner, and Bartley just kind of shrugged them off and then ran into the box like, what the fuck is happening?
I mean, are we going on to Hibs Aberdeen next? Because
we can go on to Hibs Aberdeen next.
I was
going to
bring this up anyway. Was this the most lightweight midfield battle in the history of the Scottish Premiership?
It must be up there. I mean, the average height was about 5'7".
Aberdeen's is enforced, we have to say.
Yeah.
But Campbell and Ferguson, it's needs must at the moment. It's about all they have. And I don't know what they're going to do for their next game if they don't get Ojo or Bryson or somebody back. Because
Bryson might be back. Ojo's not going to be back.
Just play Campbell on his own in the centre of midfield.
Who are Aberdeen playing next?
Celtic.
Was that right?
Yeah.
I thought it was us. That's a blow. It is us. You come to Ford Park next.
Oh, well. We don't need a midfield.
I'm sure.
Four up front.
Motherwell haven't been performing that well in midfield this season.
I'm sure that'll be absolutely fine. So, yeah, as Craig says, we'll move on to Aberdeen Hibs with Aberdeen 1, Hibs 1. 9-man Don's grind out result.
A movable force versus
nine men. There were nine men for about 20 seconds.
A movable.
I can call them anything I like.
A movable force versus a resistible object is what I've put as for this.
Are you talking about Doig being through on Lewis?
Just the pair of them, you know, the pair of both teams. There was at 1-0 down, and I say this with no pride whatsoever, at 1-0 down and a man down, there was always a feeling that Hibs would give us a chance, even though Doig had got had 4 1-on-1s. And
Hibs have a terrible record against Aberdeen. A really
they
terrible
do,
record.
But largely because of Gary McKay-Steven, who seemed to score, I think he scored 8 times or something like that against
Hibs.
Against
haven't won at Pittodrie since Sean O'Hanlon scored. That tells you how right. long ago that was.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well. Yeah. But they're not. They don't. Wouldn't normally be given. 4 1-on-1 opportunities. No. And actually, McKenna and Considine had a good game, and he still managed to get. And, you know, I think there's some credit where it's due. Joe Lewis made at least one of them was a really, really good save. But there's, I think it's the third one where Doig takes 4 touches and tries to put on his right foot. And then the final one where Scott Allen's screaming infinite amounts of space.
It's not even just Scott Allen. You can see Allen. Stevie Mallon and somebody else just coming into frame, all of them screaming at Doig, just fucking don't.
Yeah.
He did exactly the same thing as he did for the previous chance. He did it. It was almost exactly the same.
Almost all of them, yeah. Yeah.
There was two in that goal where he kind of was one-on-one with Lewis, and one of them he's got this, he can square it for a tap, and the other one he's just one-on-one and he has to, but both of them he gets on his right and he just smacks it right at Lewis.
Yeah, just it was almost like a summary of what the two teams have been like this season. Hibs missing a bunch of chances in the game, they should have been absolutely out of sight, and anyone else in the league, I would have put money on them winning that 3-0, but there was just this feeling that there would be a chance, and even though Aberdeen improved immeasurably when Curtis Main got sent off, which might be the end of him.
It's definitely not.
The frustration with Curtis Main has not been that they signed him, because I could kind of see what the theory was if they were going to put all their eggs in a Cosgrove-shaped basket. But Bruce Anderson's been brilliant in the under-21s. Conor McLennan has been brilliant for the Scotland under-21s, admittedly a different position, but they're not getting minutes. And he decides to play two very similar, theoretically at least, players up top, when also playing, Ethan Ross had a good game, but wasn't necessarily playing as a traditional winger, and it was just very disjointed. But I think you could say that for both teams. Neither one looks like they really know what they're doing or what their identity is at the moment.
Bruce Anderson's also looked pretty good in the flashes he's had in the first team, and he looked not bad in a fairly poor Dunfermline team last season.
Scored as many top flight goals as Curtis Main has in the last two seasons.
There you go.
In about 4 games.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, and he scored significantly more if you include the ones he had when he was on loan at Dunfermline, and can't remember where else he went out on loan. But yeah, and he's now 21 and looks like he might be a bit better partner all around. But both teams, I just think there's a lack of identity there.
Is Sam Cosgrove's goal the most comprehensive pinning of a defender that you'll ever see in your life?
It's a very Sam Cosgrove goal.
He looks like he's stapled him to the ground.
Yeah, yeah. There's veering off Scottish football for a bit, Adiak Nfenwa plays for Wickham.
Yeah, yeah,
he's the strongest player in the world.
He's still playing.
He's still playing for Wickham, who are second or third in League One and have had a great start to the season. And there was a great interview with him a couple of years ago where he's 5'8" and he can't jump. And they're saying, how do you win the ball off it? And he grabbed the guy who was interviewing him by the bottom of the shirt and was like, get off the ground. And the guy's trying to move. And it was one of those magic tricks, Vegas magic tricks, where it was you'll be able to lift the box. Now you can't lift the box. And he just pinned it, and that was pretty much it. Why get the, just use him as a jumping off point. That's pretty much what he does. And also, Sam Cosgrove now has one less goal for Aberdeen than Charlie Nicholas in 42 fewer games.
Wow.
Does he celebrate properly, though?
Well, not as Charlie did.
Not as Charlie did. Is there any argument against either red card in this game?
Nah, not really.
I think the main one's a wee bit harsh, but I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it looks, at full speed, it looks worse than the actual impact was, I think. Start sending off, though, isn't it?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to argue it.
I know Tom's not going to argue because he just wants to listen.
I'm quite happy with this.
If it was my team, I'd be a little bit annoyed, but I can't. Like, it's not one that I would like vehemently defend. I thought the second one definitely was. The Malin one was difficult to see because it's difficult to see how much contact he actually makes, even though he does go in with the stud showing. And the Cosgrove one, that's got to be a second booking, surely.
It was weird though, because it was not an angry game by any stretch. It was like two, and you know, for me, there's three red cards at least in that game. But you know,
22 absolute paps on the field, and some sort of three potential red cards. From one draw to another draw, we'll head for the Highlands as Ross County drew with St Johnstone 2-2, and St Johnstone's wait for a league win goes on.
They've now scored 3 of their last 10 penalties.
That's not a great... It was, however, Stevie May's first goal from open play since August 2018.
And what a goal it was.
Yeah.
Another excellent pass. Another very good through ball this weekend. Danny Swanson, who didn't do a ton in this match, but provided an excellent assist for me, and it was a very good run from me as well. Fontaine sleeping and ball watching and probably shouldn't get beaten there, but I don't want to take anything away from the goal, especially when his confidence is already quite low and he gets a penalty and the chance to break his duct at St Johnstone and he fluffs it, and it's a very poor penalty. We were talking about Osman So's one on the podcast recently. This one was just as poor.
It was like all things conspired to it. It was like Stevie May is going to take the penalty for a team that at that point have scored 3 from 9, and Laidlaw saved one last week as well and has been pretty decent. And it was like, alarm bells ringing.
He didn't score from open play against Aberdeen, for Aberdeen, but he would score his penalties for Aberdeen.
And what was, I mean, his goal, I'm slightly jumping ahead of the chronology of the game, but the thing he seemed to lack was instinct. He was overthinking everything, and he was playing a pass when he should shoot, and he was just putting his foot through it when he should have a bit more of a calm head. Everything that if he just did the opposite of what he actually did, would have ended up with, you know, a number of more goals. And it looked like an instinctive finish. It looked like he knew exactly where the ball was going to be, and, you know, all power to him, looked a bit more confident.
Why did he have a plastic hand?
Don't know, it's like replaced from the shoulder down. It's just like,
he must have got a new tattoo on his hand or something, and that was some sort of glove to protect it.
It does look a bit like his father's Darth Vader, which is entirely possible. I don't really know an awful lot about Perth, but that seems the sort of place that Darth Vader would hang out. Speaking of finishes, was Joe Chalmers' finish the most casual finish of all time?
I put down that it was polite. You know, like sometimes they're like, I'm gonna put my foot through this ball and it's gonna die.
Yeah.
And it was just like, ooh.
No, I'm just gonna place it right there where absolutely no one can get it. A lovely finish from Super Joe. I was also quite disappointed to see Danny Swanson and Ricky Foster just play football.
Although Foster was getting it tight from the St Johnstone fans. St Johnstone actually started this game fairly well. On the front foot. County weren't very good in this game overall. I think they were, I wouldn't say lucky to get a point, but I think they'd be happy with a point given the way the game went. But St Johnstone, like I say, they kind of started the brighter team, and then the first time County attacked, pretty much they scored, and you saw the defensive frailties there. Now Tommy Wright got a lot of praise for lowering the age of the squad last season, which was, it was needed. There was a lot of experienced campaigners that they'd moved on, that kind of thing. Similar to the kind of thing that Motherwell did not that long ago. But it seems like he's gone a bit too far in defence. Jason Kerr seems to be going backwards. He doesn't have an experienced head alongside him. He's now the experienced head in a defence, whether it's Gordon he's playing alongside or Duffy in this game. Ralston just looks terrible. He just doesn't look good at all. I saw someone on Twitter a couple of months ago make the claim that Ralston would be at the same level that Stephen O'Donnell is at the moment if he would like played the same amount of games as I did. And it's like, no, he's just not a good football player.
Like I said last week, I don't think Ralston's bothered. Like, there was a few times in the Motherwell game he looked like he was just shrug. Like, I'm not, but I don't want to be here.
Yeah, he didn't look good in this
game. It might be unkind on him, but there's a few times that was certainly my impression of him.
Like I say, Kerr. And the distribution from the defence has been pretty poor. Tanzer has pretty decent at driving forward every now and again. But other than that, I mean, Kerr was the biggest culprit for giving the ball away and things like that. But there is hope for St Johnstone because they do have an attacking threat, and especially if this is the start of something for May, and I'm not talking necessarily about 20 goals, but even if he can get close to double figures or something along those lines, they've got others that can share the burden with them. Dre Wright coming back, Kennedy scored. I mean, I know it's one of those goals, I mean, it's from far out, it's a decent strike, and it's the bounce that kind of beats the goalkeeper. Yeah. The goalkeeper's probably got to do better, but still, he's going to score goals. There's other attacking talent in that team. It's just... yeah, the defence. And they brought in this V-man as well. Mm. And Wright just doesn't seem to fancy him at all. Celtic Park where he had an absolute nightmare and he's just not been seen since?
Wright had spoken when he signed him that he'd seen him playing in against Northern Ireland, was it? For Estonia, I think it was.
He's Estonian, definitely.
He'd seen him playing internationally and really fancied him. And I'd never seen anything for him. Just in terms of experience and things like that. As you say, St Johnstone... probably kind of on top in the game, but looking at like Gardine, Brian Graham, Ricky Foster, even it's just a little bit Fontaine, just a little bit more sort of experience level of character within Ross County. And you saw Draper come on with sort of 20 minutes to go as well, which I think could be, I think we said this a few times, I think could be huge for Ross County as well, because it means that they can. They don't really have a natural holding midfielder in there. They've tried Gravosti there.
Yeah, Gravosti played centre half quite a bit last season. And yeah. I don't know whether he is a centre half or whether he's just filling in with injury or whether he's actually a defensive midfielder or whether he's filling in there. I'm not sure what his actual natural position is. But you're right.
They tried a few bodies in there. So having Draper plus any, like, to be honest, I do like pretty much all of Ross County's midfielders. They just need somebody else in there.
I wasn't convinced in this game Spittle and Chalmers together, and they've scored the two goals. That sounds a bit weird to say, but I thought a couple of weeks ago against Motherwell, Henderson and Payton,
Payton's looked really good.
They both looked tidy and decent defensively, but without much drive or penetration, and I think you get more of that from Spittle and Chalmers. So I don't know, maybe one from one. I see, one
that
from
that
the
seems
other.
Like the logical thing, but every time I look at Ross County,
it's not that easy. Football management's not that easy.
No, every time I look at it, it's like, is it, well, it's Spittle or Chalmers, or what? And or it's Chalmers and Vigers, or it's Henderson and Payton, like. What? Surely this is a mix and match scenario. What's going on here?
And what a goal from Spittle, by the way, to rescue the point. And he's got that in him. That's not a one-off. He's done that a few times in his career.
Just one other thing, St Johnstone. I had a look at Alistair McCann, who looks like a very nice player.
He was very good again. Yeah.
I know it sounds a very easy thing to say, but he looks like a footballer. He's one of the, every time he takes the ball and moves in the ball, he looks a very natural process for him as well. He looked really good. And he cemented Billy Mackay as well, which is very good.
He probably fouled Sunday in the build-up to...
It's Billy Mackay, absolutely cemented him in the build-up to St Johnstone's goal. And that leaves us with Hearts 0, Kilmarnock 1.
And I just to stay quiet here.
No, you carry on. I just want to apologise for Kelly fans for putting you last. It's not your fault, it's Hearts' fault.
That's fair.
Hearts are properly tested. So I've got this logic that if you have good kits, you're good at football. And Hearts are really, really testing that. Really, really testing that logic of if you have a good kit. All three of Hearts' kits are beautiful. They are rubbish. Kelly are everything that Hearts are not at the moment. We were watching a chunk of the game beforehand, and watching the highlights and things like that. The Kelly back line are so comfortable in the ball, so confident in the ball. Del Fabro's spraying like 60-yard diags to his fullback Stephen O'Donnell appearing in the right wing. Everything watching that game, Del Fabro and Finlay do not waste a ball. Whether it's a short pass into midfield and then taking it back
to the three Hearts centre backs, but they just pass it along the fucking defensive line.
It's like that. There's a midfield drill where you tie your midfielders together. It's essentially what the Hearts backline are doing. But the Kelly defenders, Hamalainen and O'Donnell, are getting right up the wings in order to provide that width, with one of Kelly's 400 holding midfielders dropping it to cover that space as well and giving them protection. But at all times, Finlay's moving the ball, Del Fabro's moving the ball, they're moving it directly to people whether it's a long ball, a short ball, sideways, whatever, always has a movement forward. It's always keeping the ball. Never waste a pass. Mm. And then on the flip side, you have, as you say, Dicamona, Smith and Berra, where teams now know press on Dicamona and Smith, make them give it the ball to Berra because he'll just lump it fucking anywhere. And it's...
turn and give it back to the keeper.
I do feel sympathy for Hearts fans because it must be miserable. It must be absolutely miserable.
Yeah, although I'm a bit numb to it at the moment. That seems to be... The reports from Tynecastle at the weekend seem to be that there's not as much booing going on as there was after, say, the Motherwell game. It's just people have got to the point where they're just apathetic rather than angry. And, I think... to add to what you've said, basically, Kilmarnock look very well drilled in showing for each other and creating triangles and getting the ball up the pitch. If there's one difference between, or the main difference I can see between Clark's team last season and this team, is that he wants to have the fullbacks pushed forward a lot more. And like you say, I think it's usually Dicker who's the guy who's dropping in, and they're compensating for that. Hearts played a back three against Hibs and looked better after switching to a back four and went on to win the game. And then last week we went back to a back three and we played two fullbacks in that back three and we played wingers at wing back and we drew 0-0 with St Mirren, who can't score a goal, and who are one of the few teams that are below us. And then we persist with this back three against Kilmarnock, against a lone striker. We know that Kilmarnock are going to play a lone striker. They've done it.
They've only got one fit striker at the moment.
And they've done it all season so far. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing in and of itself. But when you watch the game, the three of them just stay in a line and none of them step out. I mean, even when you play against a two-striker system and you play a back three, you usually see one of the back three stepping into midfield with the ball, playing a 1-2 with a midfielder or something like that. There was none of that whatsoever. And then when you've got Whelan dropping back as well, it's just, there was no wonder there was nobody to pass forward to because they were all behind the fucking ball when we had it.
And again, in Scotland over the past few years, you've seen great examples of teams utilising a back three properly. Motherwell in the midst of the Thunderdome had Kiprew who would step out,
yep,
or Aldred could step out.
Even Hanlon's done it for Hibs in the
Hanlon
past.
Hanlon would do it for Hibs in the past.
Benedictus does it for Wraith now, for fuck's sake.
Or alternatively as well, you see Livy last year as well, who played with a back three, and they shifted it left and right in order to create overloads on either side of the pitch. And Hearts just have looked at all these things and gone, no, what we will do is do a back three which is completely static and in a line at all times.
And Jake Mulroney is not a wing back because he's terrible defensively. He's barely even a winger. And we play him at wing back, and like I pointed out in the group chat as well the other day, this isn't the first time that he's been caught out not defending the back post. It's happened quite a number of times. I think this is just the first time it's ended in a goal. And even if you go all the way back to what I think was his debut against Wraith and Methil in the League Cup, Wraith do take the lead in that game, but there's a point earlier in the game where they should have taken the lead. I can't remember who it is, but somebody comes in at the back post and is unmarked because Mulroney's just not defending it properly. So why we think Mulroney is going to is good for that position, I have no idea. And the thing is, you've got a right back playing in central defence, so you've got a decent right back. I mean, Smith would walk into most of the teams in this division, play right and be comfortable at right back. We've got Hickey, who's shown that he's pretty good at left back. Yet we're playing one of the left back over on the right, and we're playing the right back in the centre of defence. It's just, it's absolutely mad. And then we've got a striker, two strikers on the bench. One, I agree, can't play every game, and he's played quite a lot of football recently with his age, fair enough. But then Keenan's on the bench, and instead you play two midfielders up front. And Levine says that Keenan's untried and untested at this level. Well, so is Machino. Mm. So is Hickey. And Hickey's been doing okay. It's just galling. And I was talking about being numb and apathetic, but I've just contradicted myself there.
I think the difficulty from the outside looking in is that Levine keeps saying that he knows how to fix it. And, you know, it's not just... But in knowing how to fix it, you'd have to show that either the thing that worked the week before, you're going to replicate that, or the thing that didn't work the week before, you're going to fix that. And it seems to be a new tweak to things, personnel, the way that the people are being utilised, switching between, you know, switching around the defence every single time, which seems like desperation rather than a calculated plan for this. And it's getting slightly more, it may be more apathetic on the terraces, but the last few weeks it's been, you know, the post-match at the weekend was, we had the majority of the play and the best chances. The game against Motherwell didn't have to be that good to score. Against Celtic, I'm more frustrated than we've ever been because I thought we should have got something from the game and we restricted them. Against Aberdeen, we deserved all 3 points. These are all games that they lost, and they were lost in large part down to like naivety.
Mm-hmm. Best chances in the Kilmarnock game, by the way, he's talking about are fell to defenders and the defensive midfielder set pieces. So it's not like we're creating things from open play and missing Gilt-Edge chances. You're talking about Di Camona and nosebleed territory at the back post.
He should still score that.
I'm not trying to defend them. They should score the goals, definitely. And Whelan puts one over the bar in the first half that he should put on target. But that's what I'm saying. Our best, he's talking about best chances, but it's not as if these are falling to attackers or anything. Anyway, we've kind of already gone over time. We should wrap it up soon, and we should apologise again to Kilmarnock fans and promise that
give them some very brief love.
Please do
give them some very brief love. I was going to say that if had Alessio not had the European start, everyone would be thinking, actually, this guy's done exactly what he was brought in to do, because he has, as a tactician, as a sort of thinking man's manager, and all the things that he was billed as. You can start to see that coming through.
All that working on shape is paying off.
Exactly. I thought Miller looked great. Burke was a menace. Chris Burke has now scored against 10 of the 12 current top flight. He's got 19 top flight goals in total against 15 different teams. Only needs a goal, I think. I can't remember who the other two... There's two teams he needs to score against to have the full set.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys, for coming along. We are off to record the Patreon, which is a Knowing Terrace podcast, knowing you, so you've asked us some questions, and we will do our best to not tell lies and answer them honestly. You can subscribe to that at patreon.com/terracepodcast from as little as $2 a month. The guys will be back on, I think, Friday post-Scotland game with a show. There's going to be more Patreon content this week as well. I think guys are recording on Thursday. The TV show inspired by this podcast will again be on BBC Scotland. I think
God knows what time.
10
maybe 10:23 this
10
time.
Something. 10 something. 10 something. Check your TV guides or your radio times. That'll be available on Friday night or for the week after on the iPlayer, as this week's episode will be as well. Thank you very much, Craig. Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you very much, Graham.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.